Hello, everybody. Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. Thanks for joining us today, whether you're live or looking at a recording. A very, very special guest today. I'm super excited. We've got Kara Golden on the show today, and you might have heard of her and her company, which is Hint. And she's going to talk about that. And I was looking her up and doing a little bit of research, and I'm just amazing, all the awards and recognition. And I think she's got a really powerful message. So I'm not going to read a whole biography. I'm going to let you look at that, and I'm going to introduce her. And I think her story will come out as we go. And I'm really excited. So let's bring Kara to the show. And Kara, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I have to ask, you know, you started this company not as a very, very young person. I mean, entrepreneurship wasn't, something that came early to you, came much later. What instigated all that?
Yeah, so I started the company in my, mid to late 30s. And, more than anything, it really stemmed out of my own interest to get healthy. And I, had taken a few years off. I had been at a company called AOL and was working on their e-commerce business and growing lots of revenue there. And then really, when I decided to take a couple of years off, I didn't have any ideas that I was going to go and start this company. And I call myself an accidental entrepreneur because of that. Yeah. I was really stumbled upon, the fact that to get healthy was not as easy as I thought. And, people ask me, was it, specific things that I had been diagnosed with? I mean, maybe TMI, but no. I mean, it was for me, weight and my skin had developed terrible adult acne, and I was just really exhausted. And I couldn't figure out exactly what was going on. And I focused on my food and started working out and thinking that that would actually solve the problem. And little did I know that, it was really when I paid attention to what I was drinking, which was diet soda, that I really changed my health. I mean, I lost over 20 pounds in 2.5 weeks. I, got rid of this, no energy life that I was in, and just also skin issues all disappeared. And that's when I really felt like, from a consumer perspective, again, that's what I was. And I was, trying to be a parent, trying to, put healthy food in my body, my family's body. I felt like, when something's actually called diet, you assume that it's better. I did, right? And and the scary thing is that, not so much. And that was, the big change for me. And I thought, if I could do it for myself, why not actually do it for other people?
When you launched this company, raising four kids as well.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's the thing these days. We're all, more than ever, everybody's trying to juggle all these things. And one of the things that you've said in past interviews and videos is basically, don't go through analysis paralysis. Don't wait till you have perfect information to launch. Get out there and do it. And I'm wondering if you can expound on that. I've got a MBA course I'm teaching right now called Leadership in New Ventures. And it's kind of the message I keep trying to relay to my students is you will never have a perfect business plan. I mean, selling is part of market research, and market research is part of selling. Did you find that?
100% true. I mean, and again, one of the things that I think about a lot is the mistakes I made, and and that we, in starting Hint, I mean, I wanted a product that I felt like we should have a clear label on the outside of our product, because it's a, it's a product that is water, right? That's clear. And what I didn't take into account was something that I had no control over, which was the lights in the store. Our first store was Whole Foods. And so when I had my product, which was a clear label, next door to a product with a white label or a colorful label, like a vitamin water, you couldn't mm-hmm. see my product. And so I thought, gosh, no one told me that, right? Yeah. No one, like I had great, you know, hired a great design firm, lots of focus groups, like all of these things. And so instead, if I would have actually just tried to get my product, obviously you want it to be safe for consumers, especially if it's a, you know, food or a beverage company, but get it out and let the consumer actually tell you what they're doing versus, you know, spending lots of money to try and, you know, be perfect, right? And so that's such a key thing. And I've heard that over and over again from entrepreneurs. And in fact, I interviewed somebody for the other day for my podcast who, mm-hmm. you know, shared the exact same information with me. He was part of a group called Y Combinator, which is a, you know, great group in Silicon Valley. It's kind of an incubator for companies. And, you know, he thought he was going to have 30 days to build his like backbone of his company, his infrastructure. And they said, no, you have three, because we're quite sure that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And that way we'll actually like eliminate what mistakes you might make along the way. Let's just get it as far as you can in the next 3 days. He was like, 3 days. But he said it was totally different than what he would have ultimately, you know, done. So not just me, I think it's a lot of other people who feel the same way.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes we're always, you know, would-be entrepreneurs are looking for the perfect idea, the perfect product. And, you know, what's been interesting to me during the last 6 months is, boy, the best insurance policy for anybody in any career these days is to sort of bet on yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd like to think that as I raised my kids is, you know, part of those messages were there. But I think now more than ever, if I was raising kids, it would be to really help them understand the option of becoming an entrepreneur. And if you've been successful, then you're probably going to continue to be successful. You know, of course, you're going to make mistakes. You're not going to win every time, but you're going to get back up and learn and go forward. Is that something that, you know, you've got this book coming out, and I want to talk about that. Is that something that really made you reflect as you had the success you did with your business that, boy, I really want to help people kind of understand and get a shortcut to some of the hard lessons you learned?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wanted to teach people what I had learned, but I also wanted, I mean, the book is called Undaunted: Overcoming Doubts and Doubters. What I wanted to really help people recognize is that, you know, it seems really sexy to be an entrepreneur these days. And, you know, and like I run into lots of entrepreneurs who share with me, oh, I'm going to start my own company because, you know, I hate working for people, or, you know, whatever. I've got this idea that this is, you know, it's going to happen and I'm going to sell it for $1 billion or whatever. And like, I think there's just so many, you know, wrong points that I've heard over the years about entrepreneurs. And so I kind of want to set the record straight. So this is a very real, as Guy Kawasaki said, when he read the book, he said, who in the world would want to be an entrepreneur after reading your book? And I was like, well, but I'm still alive and I'm still smiling through it. But, you know, it's like the challenges of it, I think, are really, really important, you know, to share with people. But then also, I think it's also the core for me was really sharing with people too, that I'm no different than anyone else, right? Like like people would say, you're fearless, you know, never had any doubts about yourself, you're very confident, blah, blah. Like, I'm like, no, I have plenty of doubts. I have plenty of failures. I have, you know, I fear lots of different things, but I think that the difference between me and, you know, and maybe group some of these, you know, successful, maybe athletes, like people who are sort of top of their game, and this perceived idea of sort of these other people who differentiate themselves, is that they don't try, right? Mm. So I was at a conference speaking last year, and I love getting questions at the end, because you just mm-hmm. like, I don't know, you just gain so much, and people don't even know what they're asking you, right? But I actually came out of this conversation saying to somebody, you know, I remember my niece was a a pro soccer player. And for a long time, she had these ideas that she couldn't do something. And she ended up going and seeing a sports therapist. And I often think about, you know, when you actually see that there's like this block that you keep talking about all the time, like, I can't do that, I'm this, then maybe it's actually, you know, people call them, you know, coaches or whatever. Like, I actually think it's even further. Like, it's like, even before you go start a company, go figure out how you knock down those walls. Go figure out. And I think it's really, like I said, I think entrepreneurs, pro athletes, all these people, they have these fears, they have these doubts too. But the difference is, how do you ultimately, you know, move forward and just go try?
You know, I'm wondering, you know, I kind of smile as you say, I'm just like everybody else, because I'm guessing a lot of people that looked at your bio and your achievements and stuff would go, I don't think I'm like her. Boy, holy cow. Do you think what really differentiates, it might not be skill and IQ, but it might be really how you're driven, you know, your drivers, your motivators. Do you think that's different, that you were, you know, able to, you know, have sharp elbows when you needed them and to be fearless despite getting knocked down? Do you think that's something that might be different than other people?
Yeah, I mean, I think this idea of like, you shouldn't do that because you won't, that you won't make that happen, was never something that I subscribed to. And I didn't have a family that subscribed to that either. I mean, I talk about my dad a bit in the book, who's, you know, as I said, could have been an incredible entrepreneur, but he founded a brand inside of a large company called Healthy Choice, and which is still one, a very, very successful brand at ConAgra. He started it inside of Armour Food Company. But the interesting thing is, his walls were actually maybe not walls, but actually priorities and things that he really cared about. I mean, we had five kids in our family. My dad, until the day he died, talked about his five kids graduating from college. And he was so proud that he, like, I don't think he really thought he was going to be able to have five kids graduate from college. But for him, that was like a priority, right? And that actually prevented him from going and doing what he ultimately wanted to do. And again, like, I don't feel that sorry for him, because he started this amazing brand inside. Could he have made a lot more money, you know, doing what he did outside and the company? Maybe. But again, like, I think people always ask me, like, should I go start a company? And I think about my dad a lot and think, you know, I don't live in your skin, right? I don't know your situation and what your priorities are and what you know, like, to me, like, having five kids, I don't have five kids, I have four kids, but having them graduate from college, I'm kind of like, I don't know, it's up there, but it wouldn't, like, you know, it wouldn't be the, like, thing that I would prioritize. I'm not, you know, dismissing my dad's priorities, but, you know, as a father too, right? Like, it's like, you know, so anyway, I think, like, the key thing is, you just really have to figure out, you know, what it is that really is important to you. But, oh, and the other thing about my dad that I thought was really, the other thing that was really important to him is that every one of his kids played a sport. So we always had to be doing some kind of sport. And so I was a runner, I was gymnastics, like, I would, you know, stop playing soccer. He'd be like, oh, okay, what are you going to play now? And there was nothing else during that season. So I'm like, softball, you know, like, it was, and he was like, oh, that's great. You know? And he was always like, oh, what'd you learn? Like, why is it different than gymnastics? And so he was always really curious and really inquisitive as to why, you know, we picked those sports or whatever. And so I was always busy, right? I was always kind of doing something and didn't have this idea that it had to be perfect.
Was this in Minnesota?
No, this was, I moved from Minnesota when I was really, really little. My dad had this, my dad hated shoveling snow with five kids. And so he said, we're moving to Arizona. And so I always joke that I was an original settler in Arizona back in the early days when no one was there. It was like 100,000 people.
In the valley.
Yeah. Well, on right where the Phoenician was, like we were right on that side of Camelback Mountain. It was beautiful. There was no one there. There were like scorpions and rattlesnakes and us. I mean, it was
I got a scar on my knee from that, right from that area on a road bike crash.
Not fun.
So Kara, you just real quick, you know, you have four kids. You know, don't you find that you're, you know, whatever the priorities are with kids, that you're only as happy as your least happy kid?
I think it's totally true. Look, it's like every parent today, I think it's helping and hoping that your kids actually find what they're passionate about and what they want to get up and do every single day. Right. Yeah. And so, but I think that the only way you ultimately are able to do that is by trying. And I think, unfortunately, you know, there's this pressure that I think so many people have where it's like, oh, that's not for me. Like, I love the idea where you just, you know, go try things, right? And because that's another story in the book where, you know, in sort of conquering fears, I kept saying to myself forever that I couldn't climb the Grand Canyon, that it was like never something that I could, you know, really tackle for, you know, a lot of different reasons, including, you know, really having this fear of, you know, the height of the canyon. And once I figured out how to tackle that and conquer that in my journey, I'll give you, you know, a little hint that I did so much research in hiking the canyon, 22 miles in one day. No one told me that in the bottom of the canyon, there's no shade.
Yeah.
And so for me, 9 miles across the canyon, it was in October. So it wasn't like June or July, but it was still like hot. No one told me how challenging that would be for me. And so, you know, that's one story where, like, I find like sometimes you may go tackle something and you think, okay, this is going to be really great, or this is going to be really hard. And then you learn things about yourself along the way that just make you better. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the story of like softball. I mean, like I played softball for years and people are like, oh, do you like softball? I'm like, no, not really. I just don't really. I'm like, I'm doing it because, you know, like I don't hate it, but I like it. But I actually liked like the idea of playing team sports. And I liked, you know, doing that. So again, I think that the key thing that I think I take away and I try to parent to is like, just go try stuff. And you actually do not know whether or not you're going to like it or not like it, or what are those little things inside, you know, that's inside of that sport or inside of that experience that you picked up on that may not have been what everybody like thought, or including you. But that's the other, you know, piece of this book that I really try and highlight too, that, you know, there's plenty of failures. I have a story in there about Starbucks and how we got into Starbucks. It was a great day. You know, when you get into all locations in Starbucks, you're, you know, woohoo, like it's great. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they decide to kick you out after a year and a half, because not because of your sales, which is even more frustrating, but because, you know, they have an idea that they want higher margin businesses. You know, I can't sell my product. It was selling inside Starbucks for $2. I can't sell it for $8, right? Mm. Like it's just not conducive with what ultimately, you know, should be, you know, our business model. And so again, like the lesson learned there is, you know, I was flying high on, you know, my Starbucks relationship. They were 40% of our overall business. And then when they bumped me out, you know, I had all this inventory that I was, you know, stuck with. They, you know, they weren't going to buy the inventory from me. They were like, you know, it's been a great ride. Thanks. You know, after, you know, a year and a half. And again, I was not that happy with them at the time, but I also recognized that, you know, this is a situation where I, you know, even when you're doing well and you're doing everything right, things can come up. COVID can come up. I mean, how many entrepreneurs, you know, have had that come up where they just didn't anticipate things?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things I've been speaking to my students about lately is this, you know, the whole idea of entitlement. You know, we were talking about what motivates people, and they're saying, you know, my employer should have this and should have that. And I thought, well, your first obligation is to, you know, produce more value than you cost. And then when you've earned the right, you can ask for things. And I know you've written articles on how to ask for raises and different things. But I mean, as an entrepreneur, I think we're keenly aware that we're not entitled to anything. Our clients don't have to keep us, you know, the Starbucks doesn't have to keep you. And so you're always in a mode of trying to, you know, create value and a great relationship. So those things don't go away. Cause I don't know about you. I, as an entrepreneur, I've never felt that I'm entitled to, you know, a customer, a client staying with me, that you have to, it's kind of like being on a team. You've got to earn your spot on the roster every single day, it feels like.
Yeah, no, I think that's really true. And, you know, another thing, I was just in another interview earlier this morning and was talking about something that I think about a lot, which is, you know, so often people think about like that next promotion, right? Mm-hmm. Like, forget about the money. I mean, that's important too, but it's like, you know, to some people, titles are really, really important and they want, you know, that is, how they measure themselves, right? Based on that. And so I've always shared with people that, you know, I think that the number one thing, if you actually do want to move up in an organization, is to your point, like you have to add value, but also figure out how do I replace myself, right? And you know, I talk about that in the book, that kind of a scary conversation for one of my employees when I said to him, like, you know, you should really, and he wasn't directly reporting to me, but I was just sort of giving him one girl's opinion. You should try and replace yourself. And he was like, what, do you want me to not be here anymore? Or like, what, where are you going with this conversation? And I said, no, because if you do your job really well, like you tell me, you're like, you know, killing it, you can do it in your sleep, all of those things, what you really should be doing is going to your boss and saying, I do all of this now. And my suggestion is that I hire somebody in and I want to take some stuff off of your plate, my boss's plate, so that I can, you know, continue being engaged and I never get bored and I want to keep learning. And so, you know, what I was saying this morning is that, you know, I always say to my team, like, hire people that are smarter than you or that are going to educate you. Because I think that there's this thinking in so many institutions, and I think I've heard are kind of teaching the same way. And I certainly was, you know, the prodigy of this, where it's like, get to be a manager and then you have people who do it, but like, that's fine. You know, maybe you have a huge team, but I talk to more and more leaders and executives and who are going up in the ranks. And the problem is that they get really, you know, they get bored, right?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, I'm not really learning. I'm managing people, but which is fine for a while, but you know, what am I learning? And so I think it's a really, really critical thing, you know, for people to learn as they're growing in the ranks, that you've got to kind of demand it, but actually show people that you get it.
Well, let me ask you about learning as you go. You had sales experience at CNN, Time, AOL, early in your career. Mm-hmm. We had the opportunity to interview Joel Peterson recently from JetBlue. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how important sales was early on. And so many people don't want to start their career in sales. But as an entrepreneur, I mean, I'm guessing that you probably find that some of the most valuable experience you had in being successful. Would that be the case?
Yeah. I mean, there were so many pieces. Like, I feel like today and what I would, you know, share with my younger self or, you know, my kids is that, like, be less concerned about being pigeonholed right into, you know, like sales or something else. And instead understand how these different components ultimately make up a business. And I think, yes, I did learn a ton about the customer and how they thought about things and revenue models and all, you know, all of that. But I think that it ultimately, if you try and do things that like you think are easy or are not important or something like that for a little while. I think it's great for everybody. We have an intern that works in our company for the last couple of summers. And it was funny. He was giving me a ride somewhere one day. And I said, he's an engineering student. And he's been primarily working on our e-commerce team. And, you know, he's super great. And I said, so what's been the most favorite part of your experience? And he said, you know, it's a really, really funny answer that I'm going to give you. But one day the customer service team was really backed up. And I, you know, was kind of interested sort of what was the problem. And so I said, hey, do you mind if I get on a customer service call? This is an engineer, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, interesting. Like, and I said, so what did you like hear? And he said, oh, they were actually really interesting conversations. But the more important thing that I realized is that the navigation through the site, which is what I really want to focus on, was actually being articulated. And so I asked to actually do a rotation for the next month in customer service so that I could really, you know, understand. Wow. Yeah. And I was like, you are going to go very far, because that is such a big, you know, that's actually putting the puzzle pieces together. Right.
Yeah, which I thought was
right. And that's the thing that, you know, it's my head of sales now, who is, you know, for all of our retailers, he actually was a founder of a brand inside of, you know, larger company and a beverage company, but Hubert's Lemonade. And so he was the founder, and they were, he actually was funded. It was kind of similar to my dad's situation, where he was funded inside of Monster and Hanson's. And so he had actually come to us and applied for the head of marketing. And I was like, wait, you're a founder and you're, you know, and he was like, I've loved your brand for a long time. And you know, obviously he built a brand and he did a great job. And it was interesting, because in his interview, he kept talking about these relationships that he had with all these retailers and how he really like love the idea that he was always talking about the story and the backstory of Hubert's and why he did it and et cetera. I was like, that's what we need like in sales. And so he was like, I've never done sales before, but I think that'd be really fascinating. I mean, I did it a little bit in the beginning. Right. And so the really smartest people and the smartest leaders, long-winded way of saying, are the ones that actually don't have these walls up in front of them to say, oh, I'm too good for that, right? I can't do that in some way, or I'm going to be pigeonholed. They're worried about the wrong things. I think doing a rotation in these, you know, things is actually, and trying is actually, you end up learning things that maybe you didn't anticipate.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of times founders within organizations, sort of being entrepreneurial without necessarily being an entrepreneur. You've been described as a disruptor, right, alongside Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg, which is pretty cool. I'm wondering if that made you like feel good, or it made you feel like, oh, that's a lot of pressure.
I'm not going to lie. When I saw it, I was like, wait, what? Like, I, you know, that one in particular, I did not know that was even coming out. They didn't interview me for it. I didn't apply for it. So it was, you know, pretty big statement. But you know, when I left New York and left CNN, I moved to San Francisco, and I had huge admiration for Steve Jobs. And I loved the idea that he really understood the customer and made things as simple as possible. And I've always believed that in not only talking to your consumer, but also talking to, you know, anybody that you're dealing with around you, you don't benefit by actually making things so difficult to understand that they can't actually come on board. And so, so for me to be, you know, alongside Steve Jobs, and, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has been photographed drinking his Hint, so not such a bad guy either. Right. And, so anyway, I think that for me has always been, very, very exciting.
So you've got a book coming out, and I have to tell you, It's not this one.
No.
It's not Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose, which is a great book. But your book, I'll flash it up here real quick, is coming out. And, you know, as you're probably getting ready to launch this, which is coming out soon, you know, people are going to ask you why you wrote the book and those different things. But I can tell you, you know, when I've talked to great publishers, I think the question, the hard question they always ask at the beginning of the process is not why do you want to write this book, but what do you hope to accomplish? You know, when people read this book, you know, what happens to them?
Yeah, the main reason that I wrote the book was to inspire people to get out of the gate, right? Like, I think that there is this, I think that that's where the biggest hole in the market is, where, you know, again, when I was out speaking, I would get these questions from the audience and obviously people doubting and having sort of identifying that they were like, you know, different than me in some way. But I felt like through my stories that I could really share these stories, not only of, you know, the good stuff, but the hard stuff and the stuff that, you know, like didn't turn out the way that I wanted them to, but it's okay. And it's all part of the journey. And I've always found like the most interesting people too are, you know, the ones that will actually own like, oh yeah, it didn't really go the way. Like, I mean, the ones that are not that interesting, right? And probably I don't necessarily want on my as my friends, or the ones that are, or my, you know, people that work for me are the ones to say, oh, everything's great, right? Like they're boring, right? They haven't had, you know, I like people to say like, oh, you know, my company went under, like I, you know, I got fired, you know, again, assume, like those things happen to like great people, right? Yeah. And so I think like, I think sharing those stories, you know, with people about how, you know, and them looking at the company now, yeah. There's, I love the people that I run into who, you know, really thought we were going to be roadkill. There's a guy in the beverage industry who writes a, B2B press piece called Beverage Business Insights, and Jerry Camuch, he's a great guy. He was like, when he saw us at the first trade show a little over 15 years ago, he wanted to know all about us. And, you know, we had Whole Foods lining up like for this drink. And he was like, where'd you guys come from? And my husband joined me at that point for the show to sort of help me. And I said, oh, we came from the tech industry. And I'll never forget, he said, he said, you seem like very nice people, but you're going to be roadkill like like next week. And so every time I see him, the first few years, I would be like, Jerry, we're still alive. Like we're still. Yeah. And now he always like brings people to our booth and says, you know what I said to her? And she will not let me live it down. And I was like, at least you own it. At least you own your mistakes, Jerry. We're all good. So, so again, I think people will doubt you, but it's really, you know, the lessons are in there, and you know.
Well, I love the title, and you know, it's interesting because a friend of mine who has been on our show, Tom Morris, he was a philosopher at Notre Dame, and he's just a great guy. He just wrote an article yesterday that basically said, "Hey, this is all for the comfort zone." Because he basically said, you know how many TED Talks and this have basically been people telling you to get out of your comfort zone? Hmm. And I thought, well, that's what my TED Talk was about. It was about, you know, get out of your zone of your zone of comfort. And I think what he was saying in the article, and I haven't yet spoken to him, but I think what he was saying is some of those zone of comfort things are things that serve you well, you know, that you don't want to abandon your strengths. But I think what you're saying is, boy, I mean, you know, you're saying get out of the gate is to go for it. And here we are during this, you know, awful time. And I keep thinking there's got to be tons of companies that nobody's ever heard of that 5 years from now, they're going to say, we started during the pandemic. That's when we got going.
Yeah. And I think people will shift and change. I mean, I've already seen, I mean, I was just talking to a friend of mine, earlier today and talking about his company. I mean, he had a very different company 6 months ago and he's redone his company. I've talked to friends of mine in the wine industry who, you know, are making more money doing Zoom wine tastings, right? I mean, I was like, wait, what? Like you're like selling direct to consumer wine in like bundles to groups and you're doing wine tastings online. And I mean, I have a friend that's doing that actually from Oregon. And you know, she's doing 10 wine tastings a week online for like large groups. And, you know, that's, I mean, again, that's a business model that has been totally reinvented. And it's also, and I think again, she didn't know that that business was going to work. Her model was selling wine to restaurants and she doesn't know when that business is really going to come back. Right. Yeah. So she is doing what she tried. She didn't know whether or not it was going to work. And now that business has grown. And it doesn't mean that she walks away from an old business, to your point about what I think that article is saying. All I'm saying is that, you know, if you don't ultimately figure out what else you can do, that I believe eventually you'll get really bored and you'll start picking on other things or get depressed or, you know, your life. We're humans. We want things. We may say like, we don't like change, but I think we actually like you want a new restaurant every now and then. You want, you know, to enjoy a new, you know, place that you go to or whatever. I think that's all I'm saying, that we need to sort of keep going and keep
trying. Well, I agree. I think we're all nomads at heart. You know, you mentioned before, you know, the power of connecting and looking at patterns and kind of seeing things and, you know, getting off a dime. And I keep wondering, you know, the thing all of our podcast guests have always had in common, all the super successful people have been that they're really curious. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was learning how to sell, I couldn't close, you know, until I figured out, like, at the end, it's like, aren't you curious about where you sit with this prospect? Mm-hmm. Don't you want to know whether they agree and they're buying what you're selling? And then I realized, well, closing is just figuring out, you know, it's satisfying your curiosity. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, you know, as we look at this pandemic and everything, I mean, it really is, boy, are you curious about how the world is changing and your role in it? And what new skills do I need to develop? And what are the unmet needs? And what are the patterns and the connections? I mean, to me, it's a horrible time and it's an interesting time. Mm-hmm. Because you know, we all know there's always change, but the change here, the rate of it's unprecedented, to use an overused phrase.
No, I totally agree. And I think I think what I'm so curious about now is, and, you know, frankly, I think about these things all the time. I mean, what else is being developed? Like I was sharing with an entrepreneur yesterday that we obviously for my day job for Hint were, we had a direct to consumer model already set up. If I didn't have that set up, things would have been really, really difficult, right? Just relying on stores because stores had shifted hours. They weren't allowing as many people in the stores. Sometimes they wouldn't allow merchandisers to actually come into the store. So it would have been, you know, really challenging, but I did what I could do in working, you know, with the stores. And then we, you know, had this direct to consumer business, which was great. But what I've noticed about retail, grocery retail now, is that there's this little business that has become a lot bigger called Instacart. And the consumer has views, they were there, right? Instacart was there and they were trying to reach this consumer and buying lots of ads. But when the consumer decided that they didn't want to go shopping anymore, it was like too hard or it wasn't safe or, you know, whatever, they said, well, I'm just going to have Instacart deliver it to my house. And so what that does to this industry, though, is that you used to have a supplier that would go directly to a grocery buyer and say, oh, I want, you know, an end cap on the, you know, the end of the aisle, like huge display, right?
Right.
Is that display important anymore? Because you've got, you know, is the impulse buys, the gums and stuff at the cash register, is it important anymore? Because instead, should you be spending that money paying for ads on Instacart so that the consumer actually sees it there, because all they're doing is they're walking, you know, their people are walking into stores and picking and packing. And so again, like that industry completely shifted. And I think like those types of things, everybody should be really like thinking about in their own industry.
Yeah, that's good counsel. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, January 11th, you wrote an article on the top three goals for 2020. Of course, 2 months before the stuff hit the fan. And those three goals were get a new hobby, team build once a quarter in person, and, you know, trust your gut. If you were going to write that article today, or you're going to give advice for 2021, would it be the same three goals, or would you which one would you replace, and what would you replace it with?
Yeah, so obviously we haven't been able to do team building in person, but we've done some. I'd say more one-on-one than anything else. You know, in that aspect, but I think like. You know, trust your gut was always, I think it's, that was always more of a reminder because I find that over time, when I look back, and particularly I was finishing my book at that point and, you know, probably was really thinking about this in particular that, you know, it's always easier to look back on things and say, gosh, I knew that was going to happen. I shouldn't have done that. But it's always a reminder and a good reminder more than anything else. And then, I don't know what else I would add to it. I mean, I think I always felt like I was a really healthy person, but not, you know, certainly when I was starting Hint, but once I fixed that, like I felt like I've followed this healthy lifestyle, but my curiosity around health and my excitement for, I think everybody, especially, you know, managing through the pandemic is trying to figure out like, how do I stay healthy? How do I, you know, avoid not getting sick, or if you're sick, getting quick, you know, getting better quickly. So I think for me, like health would, again, sort of stay on top as a, you know, constant reminder. And I think that also goes to, you know, really just mindset too, because I've never spent so much time at home, like, right. Like I'm right. Traveling, I'm constantly. So, you know, finding little projects around, you know, my house, you know, I've been doing a lot outside so that I have an environment that I, you know, can really spend time in for long amounts of time. I think like things like that, are really important, you know, to me in 2020, and I don't think they're going to go away. And also, you know, that also leads time with my family. So, it's been really nice to, you know, when you have four teenagers that, you know, even though they love me, they don't always want to hang out with me. And, you know, they were sort of forced to, you know, stay in with me and then small groups. And I think it's just really reconnecting with them too, which has been, you know, super nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got, as we're coming toward the end, I've got two more questions for you. Pretty easy ones. So what's kind of amazing, you know, looking at your story is, I mean, all the amazing people that you've been able to meet and that have endorsed, I mean, that's got to make you feel good. And you've got this podcast. I'm wondering, of all the people that you've been able to meet, get to know, I mean, what's the one that really stands out that you're, boy, doing this, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't have met this person.
Yeah. So I had just been interviewed for an article that actually came out yesterday when I met Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, that to me was like, you know, it was just an immediate wow to me that it was a funny story. I'm an advisor to this organization that is a whole group of female intellectual property lawyers. It's called CHIPS. And I don't know how I know all these lawyers, but I'm always like, do you guys know I'm not a lawyer? Like I'm married to an intellectual property lawyer, but I, you know, am not one myself, but somehow I've gotten to be friends with them. And they asked me to come and speak and talk about, you know, being an entrepreneur and things that I think about. And anyway, at that, conference in DC, they said, oh, and by the way, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be there. And I was like, I had always admired her anyway, but I mean, I just thought, oh my gosh, that'd be amazing. And so I didn't really know if I was going to get a chance to meet her. I knew she was going to be speaking at the conference, but when I was leaving SFO to fly to DC, I walked into the bookstore in SFO and she had just written her book or the book that was written about her. And I went in and I asked for a copy of it. And they said, oh, it actually doesn't come out until tomorrow. And I said, oh, shoot, I'm like maybe going to meet her and it'd be really great to have her sign the book. And the woman said, oh, well, you know what? I think I have a copy in the back room. I'll sell it to you. So, and I guess, actually, I think it was 2 days before. So she went in the back room and she sold me the book. And so when I was at the conference, I walked up to her and I said, after she talked, I said, huge admirer of you. Will you sign your book? And the first thing she said to me, she was, how did you get a copy of that book? And I was at the airport and I, you know, told them that I was maybe going to get a chance to meet you. And she sold it to me. And she's like, she's not supposed to do that. And I said, I don't know. Like, you know, I didn't even ask her that hard. And, you know, and she said, well, I think it's lovely that you got it. And so she went ahead and signed it. And I was laughing so hard because again, the unexpected happened, right? When you meet people and it was scary, right? On so many levels, but I just had such huge admiration for, you know, everything that she did and all of the stories, you know, that she told. And and so, like I said, I had just given her as an example. And then on Friday afternoon, obviously learned that she passed away. And you know, and I went back and looked at that book and looked at the signature. And I just thought, like, you know, I'm so lucky, right? That I had just 2 minutes, you know, able to like say hi to her. And she held on to my hand. And, you know, it was just a brush with greatness that I'm sure, you know, other people have had their moments like that. But I think for me, just meeting somebody like that who's tiny but larger than life.
Yeah, what a great story.
Yeah.
And my last question is, tell us about the Kara Network.
Yeah, so, you know, the Kara Network is sort of an umbrella for a lot of different stuff, including my podcast, which is called Unstoppable. But I felt like it was kind of unfair years ago when I would say to people, oh, I got a chance to, you know, meet this person who was growing their company, or, you know, they have a really interesting story, or, and I initially was really focused on women, but then what I found was that there were plenty of men who obviously supported women, that I wanted to, really highlight as well. And so that, you know, that was really it. And then in addition to that, sometimes I would have people reaching out to me primarily after they heard these interviews, and they'd say, oh, you said something really interesting. You know, is there any way that I could, like, what do you think about this? And so I started a small mentoring program where, you know, I was helping people. I, you know, unfortunately don't have as much time to do that today, but I still have lots of people reaching out to me on social, and I try my hardest to, especially if it's a pretty, you know, what I've learned, the longer you're here, things that seem really hard to people, I'm like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You know? And I feel like if I can give that encouragement and that thought to something that I've been through, then, you know, it's pretty easy stuff.
Oh, that's great. And your book comes out October 20th. Is that correct?
Yeah, October 20th. It looks like that. Unlike the other, there's a few Undaunteds that are out there. But yeah,
Show the book again, Kara.
Yeah.
That's great. And you were endorsed, and that book's been endorsed by some people others might have heard of: Jamie Dimon, John Legend, Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Adam Grant.
Yeah, so, pretty nuts.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, that's a scary thing when you ask those people to actually, you know, not only write something, but also when they demand that they have to read it before they'll actually put their name on it, which was the case for all of mine. I kept saying to my author friends, I'm like, I don't know who you're friends with, but none of my people would like just go do it. They were like, okay, send the book over. Guy Kawasaki was hysterical. If you guys don't know, Guy was in that team with Steve Jobs early on, and he's amazing. He reached out to me, and I'll never forget the first thing he said after he read the book. He said, I just want you to know before you and I talk that I'm not a very nice person. And so don't take it personally. And I thought, oh my God, what's he going to tell me? And then he went on to tell me, like, who would read this book? Because, like, you know, no one's going to want to be an entrepreneur after they read your book. And I said, but I'm still here and I'm still smiling. And he said, that's right. No, you're right. There's like so many lessons in here. I loved it. It was so well written. And, you know, same with Adam Grant. It was just, you know, really awesome. And it's actually being picked up. Wharton actually has a class. They just reached out to me, not through Adam, actually. And they're going to be using it as kind of a case study.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I'll have to look at using it next year when I teach my class next fall.
That would be great.
And Kara, Lynn just sent this note along. So, you know, again, I appreciate you coming on and spending a little time with us. And we'll post this. This will be on LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube and on my own blog with audio and everything. And, you know, just thanks for sharing, you know, some of your hard fought lessons and you know, that optimism. And I love the title of the book, Undaunted. Such a great description.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And please reach out to me on, I think it's on there, Kara Golden, on all social channels. And the book, you can get it on Amazon or Undaunted the book. And very excited.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you soon again.
Thanks so much, everyone.